Rely on God, your Savior, and find your life secure. Make His work your foundation, that your work may endure. Does your work endure? We're going to find out about that on the next Law and Gospel with the help of Reverend Mark Smith as we look at the hymn, Entrust Your Days and Burdens.
Weekday mornings beginning at 9:30 on KFUO.
This is By the Way. I saw this cartoon the other day as Winnie the Pooh and Piglet are walking together one day. Winnie turns to Piglet and says, "What day is it?" And Piglet replies, "It's today." And Pooh thoughtfully responds, "Oh, my favorite day." What would it be like to wake up excited about the day ahead and close the day, equally excited about the day just lived? Maybe we're more accustomed to arrive at the end of the day just wanting to fall into bed and hope the next day goes better. When God created the world at the end of each day, we're told, He saw that it was good. Perhaps the key to a good day begins by praying, "Dear Lord, make this day your own. Then I can be glad and rejoice in it." This is By the Way.
And you are listening to Entrust Your Days and Burdens, which is the hymn assigned for this coming ninth Sunday after Pentecost. I'm Pastor Tom Baker, and this being a Tuesday, July the 21st in the year of our Lord 2015, we have with us our good friend, the Reverend Mark Smith, after a whole week of vacation Bible school.
Yes, what a week, I'll tell you.
Did you enjoy it?
We sure did. We had a good time. And we used Concordia Publishing House material.
What was the
camp theme? Discovery. Camp Discovery. Yeah, it was kind of a campground theme.
Yes.
And
did you teach a class?
I was responsible for openings and closings.
Oh, openings and closings.
Yes.
So you opened the door for people to come in and closed it when they left?
I opened with songs and the devotions. And
how many children about?
Oh, we had about 30 to 40 kids each day.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Yes.
Uh-huh. A lot of little kids.
Well, that's what a kid is.
No, there's big kids, too.
Oh, there are?
And even some adult kids like you.
Well, I don't really check out a kid on the basis of weight. Okay. we're not too familiar with this hymn.
I know. And Paul Gerhardt wrote it. I can't, you know.
Was it in the
Lutheran hymnal? Was it in the old hymnal?
I'm not sure. But, you know, Paul Gerhardt, he died in 1676, but this tune wasn't written until Stephen Johnson wrote it, who was born in 1966.
So they had the words, but they couldn't find music for it.
Gerhardt stayed alive until Johnson was born.
Let's see.
Now, the only thing I can figure is that this is a different tune than the original. And so Stephen, you see the way you look at tunes is they count the syllables
right
in each one. So like an 8-6-8-6-7-6 it can be played to any tune that has number of beats.
I learned that real early in my ministry.
So?
I learned that if you've got a difficult melody, you can substitute with another tune of the same number of syllables.
Well, I'll try and do that with Isaiah Mighty Cyril.
Well, it doesn't work for all of them, obviously.
First time I went to college in Milwaukee, the opening service was Isaiah Mighty Cyril.
Oh, wow.
But they didn't have the notes. They only had the words in the bulletin, and nobody knew how to. It was the funniest thing. Because
that's a great hymn, though.
Well, I know it is.
You know, you're familiar with, after going to the seminary, singing it in the chapel.
Yes.
And then you take it out to the congregation and wonder why nobody knows it.
Because
it's a beautiful
hymn. Always said a hymn is good when you're finished with it, you can whistle it. But you can't whistle Isaiah Mighty Cyril.
I think I could.
No, I couldn't.
Yeah.
No, because
no. I'll tell you, a hymn is good when you know a hymn is good when you can't get it out of your head the rest of the day. You're humming it all afternoon, and there's a lot of hymns like that.
Yes.
You know,
Let Me Hold Your Hand was one I liked, and then I'm sorry, I'm talking about the Beatles. Couldn't get it out of my head all day. Why don't we get going? Because we've got six stanzas.
Six stanzas.
If you would be so kind to read the first one, Mark.
And trust your days and burdens to God's most loving hand. He cares for you while ruling the sky, the sea, the land. For he who guides the tempests along their thunderous ways will find for you a pathway and guide you all your days.
I don't know if you knew Samuel Jansel, but he was a member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, died in 2001. He's a translator of this one. And as you can see, there's some good hand rhymes with land, and then the various powers rhymes with hours. But what section is this hymn under?
Hope and comfort.
Yes.
So it must be a comforting hymn.
Well, it says to trust your days and burdens to God's most loving hand. What does that mean? God doesn't have a hand.
Well, it's what we call an anthropomorphism.
Ooh, that's a big word.
Yeah, where we talk about God's eyes.
Yes,
His all-seeing eyes. He knows all. He sees all. Even though He doesn't have eyes like we do, but nevertheless, He's omniscient. He's all-knowing. And His hand, He has His hand on everything. I mean, if He would withdraw His protective, preserving hand, this universe wouldn't last 5 minutes.
I like to think, who is at the right hand of God?
Christ.
Yes. So, can you not say to God's most loving hand is Jesus?
Yeah.
Yes, and with His promises.
Right, exactly.
Now, Paul Gerhardt, of course, lived during a violent time when religions were fighting with each other at war. And so you can understand why he says to entrust your days and burdens to God's most loving hand, because God has promises to take care of us. The only problem I have sometimes with a hymn like this for someone who doesn't know Christianity, They almost get the impression that nothing bad will ever happen to you from a human point of view.
Yeah, that's not right.
No. But what is meant by this is that even when apparently bad things happen, like you might be shipwrecked or something, God still will work it out to your good.
Well, absolutely. You know, the morning devotion this morning talked about Paul in the jail at Philippi.
You're talking about the pastor who was
right
on just before
it
us.
It was an excellent devotion. And he talked about how, you know, even though we can't understand in this world why God, we often can't understand why he does things that he does. Nevertheless, look what good he wrought, planted the gospel in the household of the jailer at Philippi.
And remember how that came about. In the sermon, he was saying they did what they always did when they were in jail, which was what?
They sang.
Yes. They sang hymns.
Right.
So don't tell me that a hymn can't bring somebody to faith.
That's right. And it talks about the prisoners listening.
Yes. Yeah. All the prisoners were listening, and even the jailer who was afraid he was going to lose his life,
right,
thinking all the prisoners had escaped, but they had not. Let me go ahead with stanza two. And this is why Jesus, I think, is the center of this hymn. Rely on God, your Savior, and find your life secure. Make his works your foundation, that your work may endure. No anxious thought, no worry, no self-tormenting care can win your Father's favor. His heart is moved by prayer. That's kind of interesting. Well, what do you think that Gerhard here is speaking out against? What kind of people when he says, no anxious thought, no worry, nor self-tormenting care?
Yeah, people, it's all on them. You know, they think,
yes,
oh, it all depends upon me.
Right.
How am I going to work this thing out? You know, he's saying, hey, look, it's in God's hands.
Yeah, what wins the Father's favor is, of course, the work of Jesus.
Right.
And so many people don't recognize that. They think that I got to win the Father's favor. You can always tell. I love asking questions to get people confused. And here's one of them that works here. What could you do to get God to love you more? And people actually put their hands up and say things. Well, I could go to church more often or this or that. But what are they missing?
Well, they're missing the point. God loved us so much that he poured out his son's blood for us. I mean, how much more could he love us already?
Yes. And
that was while we were enemies.
Yes. So I often will say there is nothing you can do to get God to love you more, and there's nothing you can do to get God to love you less. See, for them, love is a emotion that goes back and forth between, like, for example, if a child comes in and the parents are yelling at him because he's late or something, and somebody would ask him, do your parents love you right now? He'd say no.
Yeah, you know, I've often thought too. And here's something for Sunday school teachers. It's something for parents. You know, one of the things you don't want to say is, you know, if you do that, Johnny, God won't love you.
Yeah,
you know, that's all. You know, you
Concordia Publishing House, which is our publishing arm of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, had a pretty good series not long ago about things that Sunday school teachers misdo when they're teaching. And that was one of them, that God won't love you if you do that. And they had about 10 examples of things, which was really a confusion of law and gospel. Because if God so loved the
world,
then how can he not love you,
even
if you're part of the world and not part of the church? This is something that we don't understand because our love goes up and down depending on how we're treated.
Yeah. Well, when you said earlier, you can't do anything to make God love you more, and you can't do anything to make God love you less.
Right.
That second half of that is especially comforting, isn't it?
Yes.
It really is.
Because when
you think about that. You can't do anything that would make him love you less.
And you indicated why that's true when you talked about the cross. The theologians of the cross see a love there that is immense. Whereas the theologian of self-glory, they interpret how God reacts to them by their experience. So when they have what they consider to be bad experiences, uh-oh, I must have done something wrong.
Right.
And you know how many times people will come into our office, say, this happened. What did I do?
What did I do to deserve this?
Yes.
Oh. Why is God punishing me?
Yeah. Oh, so when you said you deserve nothing but temporal and eternal punishment, you don't think this meets that? Yeah, we need to understand. I preached here yesterday in the chapel, and one of the points I was making is that when what we consider to be negative consequences come to unbelievers, it's always a part of God's judgment, his law, to try and bring them around. But when negative consequences come to believers, God only permits it if he works it out for our good.
Good, right.
And it's always a blessing.
That's right.
For us.
Always.
Yes.
Always. Even though we can't understand it this side of heaven.
Absolutely. Stanza three.
Take heart, have hope, my spirit, and do not be dismayed. God helps in every trial, and makes you unafraid. Await his time with patience through darkest hours of night, until the sun you hope for delights your eager sight.
And the word sun isn't spelled S-O-N.
S-U-N.
Yeah, so Jesus is the light of the world. But now here's a question, if I'm reading this, where it says that makes you unafraid. So if you're afraid of something, is that a sin?
God helps in every trial and makes you unafraid. No, that's, well, wait a minute. You asked again, what did you ask? If that's a sin to be unafraid?
No, if you are afraid, is that a sin?
If you
has he failed in not making you unafraid?
Well, you might lack a little trust. I don't know whether you know.
Okay, your child.
What do you think? Do you think being afraid is always a sin necessarily? It might show a little lack of trust. But
if being afraid is a sin, Jesus is a sinner.
Oh, I see. Well, what is?
Because he was afraid in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Would you call that being afraid?
Yes. Here's the point I think that Gerhardt's talking about. He's not talking about the fear we have of what's going around us, but the fear that God has left us. This is his wrath upon us.
Right.
And the point is, you do not need to be afraid of that. But to be afraid, I mean, I remember
Jesus was sorrowful. Yeah. He was sorrowful to the point of death. But would you say that he was afraid?
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't have.
I have to think about that. Yeah. I know it says he was sorrowful. Does not say he was afraid.
Yeah, maybe the word's not there, but what do you call that? Where, Father, remove this cup if it be your will, sweating as of drops of blood.
Yeah, sweating like drops of blood, right.
Yeah, so I think.
He may well have been afraid. I haven't really pondered that.
You can't imagine anybody going to be crucified isn't afraid of what's going to be happening.
Yeah, and he was true man, so.
But he obeyed the Father because he had no fear of the Father.
Implicitly trusted him.
Exactly. And so I believe what Gerhardt is talking about here, that you will be unafraid. You mention it. These bad things that are happening to you are not punishments from God.
No, they can't be.
Therefore,
it all works out for our good.
That's right.
Now the unbeliever does not have that.
No, no. He doesn't have any of the benefits of being a believer.
That's right.
Like I just said, those consequences of his sin are meant to wake him up. They're part of God's judgment.
Right.
In fact, this is what I talked about in the sermon yesterday, is God promises to bring judgment on the immoral, the adulterers, etc. I was talking about gay marriage. That's out of Hebrews 13.
Right.
So what do we as Christians do? We know that there will be negative consequences in a gay marriage. What we do is just sit back until they occur and people are saying, where is any help? Where is my comfort? And then we step in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we wait for the opportunity. I mean, the worst thing you can go and do is tell a really rich person who has no problems in his life that his sins are forgiven. He'll just ignore you. But if someone dies he loves, or he's afraid of losing his money, and you see, this is a promise from God that he will bring judgment on the immoral, which I consider to be a very good thing.
Yeah. Whoremongers and adulterers God will judge, it says.
Yeah. In fact, it's kind of like, can you imagine that every illness you have, you never have a symptom. You never feel pain or anything. That would be terrible. In fact, that's part of the problem with leprosy.
It deadens the pain.
Yes.
The nerves die out.
Yeah, you put your hand on a hot stove and don't realize it's burning because there's no pain. So that's one of the worst things that God can give us, is no longer give the consequences of our sin, because then we say, well, we don't need God. So we Christians, just like with the abortion situation, finally, a lot of women come to the point where they really feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
It's time then for the church to step in and give them this comfort. Let me read number 4. Leave all to his direction. His wisdom rules for you in ways to rouse your wonder at all his love can do. Soon he, his promise keeping, with wonder-working powers, will banish from your spirit what gives you troubled hours, or what gave you troubled hours. That's interesting.
Soon he is promise-keeping with wonder, working powers, will banish from your spirit whatever gave you troubled hours.
Yeah. Like when a loved one dies in an accident or because of sickness, you have troubled hours at that point.
No, absolutely.
And the purpose of the funeral is to dissuade those troubled hours so that you now have, remember, hope and comfort.
Right, exactly.
And that only comes by somebody talking about the promises of
God. That's right. That's right.
Apart from the promises of God, there is no hope.
No.
I'm going to talk more about this tomorrow, but you know what is a huge problem in China right now? What teenagers are becoming addicted to?
What's that?
The internet.
Really?
They're spending 10 to 15 hours a day playing these games. They're dropping out of school. They're not
really
talking to their parents. And I was surprised. The Chinese government has established 400 places where these kids are locked up for 3 months. To try and get them...
To get them off that stuff.
Yeah, I saw the whole hour on
television.
Well,
it's just like, you know, just like our own youth. You know, you see, what's a typical profile of a youth today? You see them walking around...
Yeah.
Holding the...
machine.
Yeah. I mean, they don't even look up at you anymore.
And, you know, it was so funny because these Chinese weren't using religion to help, but they discovered what a Lutheran could have told them, why these kids are on there. They are lonely.
Uh-huh.
They don't have any friends in the real world. So the virtual world really makes them happy.
Yeah. So this is really, when did you hear about this?
It was two nights ago.
No kidding.
It was
that's first I'd heard that.
A documentary on it. And they went there and took pictures. And, oh, boy, it was really something. They're 70% successful, they said, in getting a kid to be unaddicted from this.
Do they think we have a similar problem?
It wasn't mentioned.
That wasn't talked about.
No, but in China, here was one of the reasons. How many children are they allowed?
One.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they don't have any brothers or sisters.
Right. No siblings.
And then their fathers, who were also part of the group, many of them were very mean, mm-hmm. you know, because they're not Christian. And so they would really discipline their children. So there are huge areas where there's nothing but computers in the store, and the kids go in and pay and then play hour after hour after hour on these games.
It's like the old pinball machines.
Well, yeah.
We won't talk about that on top.
We'll go on with stanza five, please.
Okay. O blessed heir of heaven, you'll hear the song resound of endless jubilation when you with life are crowned. In your right hand, your maker will place the victor's palm, and you will thank him gladly with heaven's joyful psalm.
Yeah, the way I like saying this is there's an Olympic race. Jesus is in it, you're in it. So the race starts, you end up last, Jesus is first, but on the podium, he gives you the crown.
Right.
And it's yours.
That's right.
And see, that's what he's talking about here in heaven.
The Lord, our righteousness.
Yes.
His righteousness is made ours.
Is that what you're preaching on this Sunday?
That was last Sunday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, what did I preach on? Oh, I preached on...
Feeding the 5,000?
No, the need to feed the pastor with more money. Okay.
Where'd you get that text?
Well, it was feeding the 5,000.
Oh, thou shalt not muzzle the ox that treadeth out the corn.
Yeah,
is that it?
Or something like this. You know. All righty. I wonder if anybody ever thinks we're serious here. Okay, let me go ahead with the last stanza. Our hands and feet, Lord, strengthen, with joy our spirits bless, until we see the ending of all our life's distress. And so throughout our lifetime, keep us within your care, and at our end then bring us to heaven to praise you there. So a lot of the hope and comfort, what's that verse Paul uses? If for this world you...
We are most... If for this world we... How does it go?
Only have hope.
We only have hope for this world. We are of all men most miserable.
Yes, yes. Know? And so a lot of our hope and comfort...
It's eternal.
Yes. But the hope and comfort is still here on earth.
Absolutely.
We don't have to wait for heaven to God to arrange our life so that we're satisfied.
Yeah. Our eternal life begins with our baptism.
Well said. Because in that baptism, you get a promise.
That's right.
I had a very interesting conversation with one of our listeners, and he was wondering if John 6, which talks about if you eat my flesh and drink my blood, if that's talking about the Lord's Supper.
Don't they call that a double entendre now? Was there talk about that?
No.
Is that talk about the Lord's Supper or not? What do you think?
Okay, in my opinion, there's two reasons why it's not talking about the Lord's Supper. Number one, it says, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life in you. Well, Abraham never had the Lord's Supper. There were thousands of people. Mm-hmm. So that's why, number one. Number two, here's my question. If the Lord's Supper had never been established, would John 6 still be true?
Sure.
Yes, because what is eating his flesh and drinking his blood? It is through faith believing in him.
That's what he considers.
Now, here's what I say. John 6, therefore, has nothing to do with the Lord's Supper, but it explains why God gave us the Lord's Supper so we don't have to rely on our faith. We actually do eat his body and drink his blood and therefore get all the benefits of John 6.
So it's not talking specifically about the Lord's Supper, but it explains why it is beneficial to us.
Absolutely, because God knows that sometimes our faith is weak. So he always gives us an outside sign to assure us. He did it in baptism, which you just mentioned.
Right.
So we no longer have to rely on our faith as to whether we're saved. We can look to baptism. And he also does it with the Lord's Supper. So that somebody can, if you're asked, did I really receive the body and blood of Christ? Did I get the forgiveness of sins? Oh, yes, I took the Lord's Supper. Or I received the Lord's Supper is another way of putting it. So that's my opinion on John 6. If the Lord's Supper had never occurred, John 6 would still be there. Because eating and drinking refers to faith. But once God established the Lord's Supper, you can go back to John 6 and see all the benefits you get.
Yes, yes.
For sure, because you don't have to rely on your faith anymore. That's my understanding of it. But as Lutherans, a lot of people don't realize this, we can differ on specific interpretations of
text. I think there are some differences of opinion on that passage.
Oh, there definitely is.
But I like yours. I have to say, I like the way you've explained that.
All right, I'll give you $5.
Okay, all right, no.
And your worship services.
Yeah, Saturday at 5 p.m., and then Sunday at 9 a.m., followed by adult Bible class, 10:15.
Okay, and I'm sure many appreciated...
Prince of Peace Lutheran Church.
Yes. I'm sure many appreciated the Vacation Bible School. I'm Tom Baker. I'm going to be preaching Rosebud this week. Please listen how to support this program.
Gospel each weekday at this time on Worldwide KFUO. For a contribution to the program, make your check payable to Law and Gospel and mail it to Pastor Tom Baker, Post Office Box 28910, St. Louis, Missouri 63132. You can call toll-free at 1-877-267-1962 or email Law and Gospel at lawandgospel101.com.